Hello, and welcome to another fascinating issue of Charlie Cook's Insider Circle Monthly audio programs, jam-packed with the most realistic, practical, and up-to-date money-making secrets. Your host is Charlie Cook. Charlie's been helping business owners attract more clients and maximize their profits for over two decades. And while most people were still trying to figure out how to use the web, Charlie sold his second website for just under $1 million. Today, Charlie is one of the most sought-after business mentors on the web and a best-selling author, recommended by some of the top marketing and sales experts of all time, including Brian Tracy, Tom Hopkins, J. Conrad Levinson, as well as online entrepreneurs like Yannick Silver. To get the maximum benefit out of this month's program, ask yourself these questions during the interview. How can I apply these ideas to my business and to my life? How can I do things differently and get better results? And what actions can I take today, this week, and this month to reach my goals? And you'll want to listen to the interview more than once. Every time you do, you'll discover new ideas, new strategies, and new ways to sell more of your products and services, make more money, and be more successful. What's the first thing you want to do when you launch a business or you want to jumpstart sales? If you thought get attention, you're on the right track. The question is how. How can you get the phone ringing and get a flood of people to contact you and buy from you, especially if you don't want to spend a fortune on advertising, mailing, or search engine optimization? On this CD, Charlie interviews David Meerman Scott. David is a marketing strategist, keynote speaker, seminar leader, and the author of the new hit book, Worldwide Rave. His previous book, The New Rules of Marketing and PR, is an award-winning Business Week bestseller and being published in 24 languages. He's a recovering VP of marketing for two publicly traded technology companies' marketing programs and is responsible for selling over $1 billion in products and services worldwide. In the next few minutes, you'll discover the simple and low-cost marketing strategies that you can use to get a flood of attention for your products and services.
Hello, this is Charlie Cook. For most entrepreneurs and small business owners, getting attention, getting people talking about them and their products and services is a struggle. They may spend money on mailings, advertising, and even search engine positioning. And what do they get in return? Usually very little in terms of sales. And while big companies have big budgets and may be able to afford throwing away money on traditional marketing and advertising, getting it right from the get-go is essential to every entrepreneur and small business owner. Today, I have the pleasure of talking with David Meerman Scott, who discovered while working for a large publicly traded company that his homegrown, low-cost viral marketing strategies blew the old-school spend and advertise model out of the water. David, welcome to the call.
Hey, Charlie, thanks. It's great to be here.
David, thanks for joining us. Can you start by telling us a little bit about your background, what you were doing before you jumped ship and started your own business?
Yeah, absolutely. I worked in the online information business most of my career, and I worked for a company called Knight Ridder. At the time, it was the second largest newspaper company in the United States. I was Asia Marketing Director based in Tokyo and Hong Kong for nearly 10 years. And then I worked for a couple of different technology, information technology companies back in the U.S., and I was the vice president of marketing of these companies, fairly large, you know, sort of publicly traded size companies. And so what I did was I applied what I knew about electronic information and how people consume information online. And this is pre-web, by the way. This is before 1995. I applied what I learned in an online environment before anyone else was really exposed to this online environment to marketing during the late 1990s and early into about 2000. Things like creating news releases for the purpose of reaching buyers through search engines, things like creating really great content on websites. And what happened was the company that I was working for was called NewsEdge in 2001, was acquired by a big company called Thomson Corporation. They're now called Thomson Reuters. And they took a look at what I was doing, and they fired me. I know, isn't it great? So now it makes a great story. But it was It was
one
of the best.
Why did they fire you?
They fired me because I was not doing the kind of marketing that people knew you should do. I mean, people would say, oh, gosh, if you're a marketer at a company, you have to buy advertising, you have to buy big direct mail lists and send everybody a postcard, you know, you have to be in the yellow pages, you know, all these things that people say you have to do. And I said, well, wait a minute, if everyone's going to Google and the other search engines to find things, and they go to websites to learn about a company, why don't we spend some of our time doing those things? And they said, well, that's not the way that we market here at Thompson. So they decided that they wanted me to take a hike. But that was great because that allowed me to start my own business where I write books, I blog, and I give speeches all over the world about what I call the new rules of marketing and PR.
So it sounds like those were based on what you just said, how people process information, particularly now in the online information age. What's unique and different about how people process information now?
Yeah, so what we're learning is that over time, more and more and more people go to the web first when they're researching a product or service that they might want to buy, or when they're communicating with their friends and their colleagues and their family members. So what happens is, if I want to, and I did this today, I needed a new suitcase. I mean, it sounds mundane as hell, doesn't it? I need a new suitcase. So what did I do? I go to search engines. I go to Google, and I type in a couple of the brands that I'm familiar with. I typed in the type of suitcase I wanted, they call it a rollerboard, which is that you put in the airplane. And I ended up finding a bunch of sites where I could compare and contrast the various, carry-on baggage that I needed to buy. And I bought it online. The whole thing took 30 minutes. I didn't go to a store. I didn't look at a newspaper or circular. I didn't go to the yellow pages. I didn't do any of the things that we used to do. And my research shows that's the way that many, many, many people are solving their problems today, whether it's a medium-sized purchase, like a couple $100 piece of luggage, or a large purchase, like a college education or a car, or a tiny purchase, like a song on iTunes or a book. And I'm just noticing that there's this huge disconnect between the ways that everyone tells me that they themselves look for products and services, which is typically using the web. The other thing they do, by the way, is they ask their friends and colleagues for advice. You know, I didn't do this, but I might have said to my brother, who also travels a lot, hey, what kind of suitcase do you use and do you like it? And then typically they might send me a website to go to. So there's a disconnect between that and the ways companies are marketing. The way companies are marketing are the ways that they've done in an offline world. And in an offline world, you really only have three ways to generate attention. One way is that you can buy it with advertising. You can buy billboards or yellow pages or advertising in newspapers or magazines or TV or radio. Or you can work with the media to generate attention. I call that begging. So you can beg for attention with the media, trying to get reporters and editors to write about you or broadcast about you. Or you can hire salespeople or do it yourself to do direct selling, call people up on the phone or go door to door or have a storefront with sales, stocked with salespeople that sell when someone walks in. And I call that bugging people one at a time for attention. What the web allows us to do, which is so interesting, is earn attention by creating something really interesting online that people will find via the search engines and that they'll find when they get to your website. Things like YouTube videos or ebooks or blogs or Twitter feeds, all sorts of things like that that can brand your organization as one that's worthy of doing business with.
What you just said there is sort of a transformational idea, a big idea, and I just want to make sure everybody understands, what's the difference, maybe you can just explain this, between the notion of earning attention versus buying, begging, or bugging.
Yeah, thank you for asking the question that way. I spent a lot of time coming up with three words that all begin with B and have three letters. it's like, oh God, that's pretty cool. I can use that now. Buy, beg, bug. I can remember it. So I think of it this way. I think of the web as kind of like a really big city. Right? So if you think about the web as a really big city, you've got eBay as the garage sale, you've got Amazon.com as the bookstore, you've got Craigslist, which is the bulletin boards in front of the supermarket. You've got companies that have their websites, which is like the storefronts in Main Street, or if it's a B2B company like a lawyer or a doctor, they might have offices upstairs along the Main Street. And you've got your underworld of porn and spam going on in the city, as well as you have it going on in the virtual world of the web as well. And I like to think of things like social media, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, blogs, chat rooms, forums, all of those kinds of things as like cocktail parties of the city. So, and I know this is a tortured metaphor, but follow me through, because I think it is kind of important. If you think about it that way, that what you're doing when you're creating information online is you're interacting in much of the same way using social media that you do in a real life social situation like a cocktail party. Now imagine you're a real estate agent and you go into a real cocktail party with 200 people you've never met before. And sure, in the back of your mind, you want to sell some real estate. That would be a good thing, or get a listing. That would be a really good thing. So how do you do it? Well, you could go into the middle of the room and yell at the top of your lungs, "I'm a real estate agent, buy my products." and that's kind of what people who go in with a sales bent and who are, deeply steeped in the tradition of selling try to do in social media. They try to just sell products. Or you could act like an advertiser. And an advertiser is really good at creating clever things that get noticed and putting them in magazines and newspapers and whatnot. So what an advertiser would do in a cocktail party, if they were using their techniques, is they'd walk into the middle of the cocktail party and they would hang posters up along the walls that say, that advertise their product or service. What a PR person would do, PR people are really good at convincing journalists to write about them or broadcast about them. What they would do is they go into a cocktail party, talk to one person and say, "Hey, I really want to talk to that person over there. Would you go over and tell them something for me?" And I know, again, this is a tortured metaphor, but follow me through to the end here. What really works in a physical cocktail party is when you personally walk in and have a few meaningful conversations with people. "Hey, how are you? My name's David. Who are you?" "Oh, yeah, it's great. And do you have any hobbies? Do you have any kids? Do you live in this neighborhood? What do you do for a living?" "Oh, that's interesting. Really? Oh, that's cool. Maybe I could talk to you later, because I might have a problem that you could solve for me." And that's how people interact in cocktail parties. I think that's also true of how the people who are very successful using the web as a tool to interact are when they create a sort of a presence on the web to deliver information. They do it in a way that's helpful, that's social, that's interactive, and that ultimately respects deeply the people that they're trying to communicate to. But that, interestingly, that's not really the way that we've been taught to do marketing and public relations, if we've either learned at a school or we've learned through traditional books or we've learned on the job, because most of the ways that we learned as entrepreneurs or as business owners or as shopkeepers is we've learned using the methods that worked offline. And the ways that you communicated offline are just utterly different in terms of what succeeds in an online environment.
That prompts two sort of questions in my mind, which is, one, for the entrepreneur, the small business owner, what are the offline sort of methodologies that they might have been using and learned along the way that are now obsolete, and what should they stop doing?
And then
once you get done answering that, the next question is, well, once they've stopped doing those things, what should they start doing? And in terms of things that they should start doing, maybe you can talk a little bit about what you started doing to launch your career.
Sure, absolutely. So the first thing that I need to say here is that when I talk about the new rules of marketing and PR, I'm not suggesting that the old ways of doing things are obsolete. I am suggesting this, though, and this is really important. First of all, it is absolutely true that people are turning to the web in huge numbers to solve problems, and they're going to the search engines, they're asking their friends, they're visiting websites. It's just that's a truth. The last data I saw is that there's over a billion people online right now all over the world. I mean, it's just huge numbers. So if you want to reach those people, then you do have to think differently. However, you know, if the Yellow Pages are working for you, that's great. Don't change that. I mean, last thing I want you to do is stop using the Yellow Pages if that's working for you. Or if you have a billboard by the side of the road and it's drawing people in, or you're advertising in the newspaper, that's great. Keep doing it. However, to be successful on the web, you do need to think differently. One of the biggest changes, I think, that transforms entrepreneurs and business owners outlooks and the way that they do their online marketing is to make one really simple change, and that is stop talking about yourself and your products when you do your marketing, and instead think very deeply about who your buyers are. I call them buyer personas. Who your buyer personas are, and instead of talking about you and your products and your services, think about what you can do to solve the problems that your buyer personas have. Now, let me give you a short example of this. Imagine that you're an architect, and you have a small architectural firm, maybe a couple of people who you work with, and you do work in a local town. Maybe you do some residential, a little bit of light commercial stuff. What most architects get very, very good at in terms of their marketing is buying ads in the newspaper and having a really good-looking storefront and talking about the buildings they put up. And, okay, that's your product. Now, what's the problem that you solve? Well, you've got perhaps somebody like me who wants to have a new home, and I want to have a better lifestyle. That's what I'm looking for. I want to have a home that better suits my lifestyle. So now imagine if that architect, instead of talking about the buildings they put up, created a blog about how architecture and buildings and rooms and materials and furnishings can improve people's lifestyles. And imagine even further if they had an example of this in the form of a blog, that every post over the course of a couple years would be a different aspect of how you create a building, in this case a home, that fits an individual person's lifestyle. They could actually follow an entire building being put up over the course of 2 years, from the very beginning of meeting the homeowner for the first time all the way through buying the land, putting in the foundation, picking the furnishings, all the way through to the handing over the key when they're ready to walk in the door for the first time to their brand new home. But the thing is that when people are steeped in the traditions of offline marketing and advertising and talking about their products and services, they're not as good at creating that type of web content, a blog or a series of 50 YouTube videos, each one is a different component of that home, that they're just really hard for them to create that. But once you start to think about who are my buyer personas and what problems do I solve for them, then your marketing can be transformational and you can start to do that online.
So let me see if I've got it right here, which is that so far what we've talked about is that the first important thing that any small business owner or entrepreneur needs to be doing is stop selling and instead focus on prospects' problems.
Correct. And, absolutely. And that's a great way to sum it up.
And the second is then they need to think about, well, how, given where their target market is looking and where their target market's eyeballs are and attention is, how can they earn their attention and then use that process of earning attention to start to build relationships.
Excellent. Absolutely right. And what's interesting about that, the ways that you can earn attention, is that there's a multitude of ways online that you can earn attention. And a lot of people who I speak with who are business owners say to me, well, I'm not a marketer. I'm not a writer. You know, what in the world can I do? I don't want to start a blog. A lot of people are giving out advice that I think is counterproductive. They say that you have to have a blog or you have to be on Twitter or something like that, which I don't believe at all. But here's what I do believe. I believe that everyone who's listening in right now, every single person, has a skill of some kind that lends itself to creating something valuable on the web that can brand them as an organization that would be great to do business with. So, for example, yeah, some people are writers. Like, I'm a writer, so I love writing my blog because I like to write. I'm a text-based sort of guy. But maybe you don't write. You don't like to write. Well, maybe you're good with video, so you can create a series of YouTube videos, and it's free to put up a YouTube video, so it doesn't cost anything. You can buy a flip camera for $100, which are great. That's what I use. Maybe you can do an audio podcast like we're recording now, something that you can do in audio. Maybe you're good with photography. Maybe, for example, let's say you're, and I'm making this stuff as I go along, but maybe you're a hairstylist and you've got a hair salon and you're an entrepreneur. You're maybe going to think about starting a couple of other hair salons in some other cities nearby. Imagine if you had a series of a couple of hundred different hairstyles that you photographed and figured out ways that you could put those onto a site or onto a blog somewhere that you could identify what the hot hairstyles are or how you could, you know, if you want Jennifer Aniston's hair, here's what you have to do. I don't know. I'm making all this stuff up.
Well let me throw in one example around that. I don't know if you're familiar with this site called the Sartorialist, S-A-R-T-O-R-I-L-I-S-T.
No, I don't know that one.
And it's a fellow who was interested in fashion photography.
Oh, okay.
So he just started taking pictures of people in New York, actually using the fashions, not the typical fashion shots.
And so
he created this blog with pictures of people, you know, wearing styles around New York. And he became, over time, you know, within a year, his site got so popular that he's now... has an editorial column, he's a consultant,
right.
He's turned it into a whole business just by posting, you know, picture after picture of people looking stylish and fashionable in New York.
Exactly, and that's exactly the point. The point is that we're not all writers, and so this doesn't mean that you have to write a blog or you have to do a Twitter feed. And I think so often when you read books or you read the media or whatever, people will give you this advice that you have to do these things. Well, you don't. You know, there can all kinds of different ways to earn that attention. And the example you just gave of somebody who's really good at shooting photos, that's great. A couple of other things just to throw out as a way to think about. It could be charts and data. Imagine a real estate agent in a town that collects and analyzes all the sales data going back for 30 years in a particular town, and maybe down to the point of analyzing if there's been any significant differences between the homes that are located in one elementary school district versus another elementary school district in that town. Maybe analyzing the differences in price changes between two-bedroom houses and three-bedroom houses and four-bedroom houses. And again, I'm making all this stuff up, but that is an individual who's not doing photographs, who's not doing video, who's not creating text-based content, but who's creating data. And now that data could absolutely become the number one hit on the search engines for the name of that town and the word real estate, or the phrase real estate. And all of a sudden, you own the top search term in your town for real estate. And you could have been a town of 100,000 people. All of a sudden, you're the number one real estate agent based on what Google says in your town. You don't have to be the biggest. You just have to have the best information.
So, you know, you made up a bunch of great examples there. And I need to
come up with real examples, Charlie. I mean, every time I come up with these examples, I do have some really great ones that I want to share a little bit later of real people who have done this kind of thing. But I'm making these ones up in this case because I do think that anyone can do this, and those are ideas that just popped into my mind.
But speaking of a real example, how about you? How did you, you know, what did you do to begin to, you know, get attention and build relationships for your business? And maybe you can, you know, help people get an idea of, you know, what you created and how successful it was in terms of getting attention.
I would love to do that. But let me share one example before I do that.
Okay.
Because I think this is very illustrative of what I'm talking about. I want to share the example of Dr. Helene Smith. She's a dentist in the Boston area, which is where I live. I live in the Boston area. And Dr. Smith is just a dentist. She's not a marketer. She doesn't have any degrees in marketing. She's not a writer, per se. I mean, she can write, but she's not like a professional writer or anything. And about 3 years ago, she was kind of getting frustrated at her business because she was, you know, she's an entrepreneurial dentist, and her business was generating $150,000 per year in revenue. And as a dentist, that's kind of just holding your head above water. She was also spending $2,000 per month on Yellow Page advertising. $2,000 per month. So, like, holy cow, I'm spending $2,000 a month on Yellow Page ads. And the, by the way, the Yellow Pages in Boston for dentists, the first page goes just to the letter D. So you can imagine competing. Can you imagine competing in that market? And people think of dentists as more or less interchangeable. So it's a tough market. So what she did was she said, I've got to be a better way. She started to do the things that we're talking about here. She had actually read my book, so she had a sense of my book, The New Rules of Marketing and PR, had a sense of the sorts of things I talk about, decided to try some of them. The first thing she did about 2.5 years ago, she started a blog. The blog is called the Healthy Smiles Blog. And then about a year and a half ago, 18 months ago, she wrote an e-book. Now, an e-book, it sounds big and difficult, but it's not. It's a reasonably short document, 20 pages, let's say, but with a lot of white space and pictures, so it doesn't have a lot of text. Her e-book, then, she gave away for free on her blog. It's well-designed. It's interesting. It's called Healthy Mouth, Healthy Sex, believe it or not. And it's about your oral health, how your oral health affects your sex life. Now, a few things happened when she put this out. The first thing that happened was her existing patients said, wow, this is cool, and they started to pass it on to their friends. Then other bloggers like me picked it up. I picked it up, and I wrote about it, so she started to get more notice. The American Dental Association started to freak out because, like, oh, my God, you can't talk about sex. We're dentists. So that kind of built some interesting controversy. And remember, she's a dentist, so her business is very local. You know, you don't. No one's going to get on an airplane to come see a dentist. So her business all comes from the Boston area. And what happened was when people said, hey, do you know a dentist in Boston, they would send people to Dr. Smith. And when people went to the search engines to look for a dentist in Boston, they would find Dr. Smith. And when they read that e-book and when they read their blog, they said, well, this is a dentist I want to do business with. So now we're about 2.5 years after she started that initiative and about 18 months after she started, she published that e-book. Her business now, recall it was $150,000 when she started this, her business is now worth $1 million a year in revenue.
Wow.
She crossed the $1 million mark. She gets between $10,000 and $15,000 per month in new business every single month. That's net new patients. That's not existing patients. It's net new patients every month through the web, people who seek her out. Now, here's the other thing that's interesting. It's free to post an ebook, and it's free to start a blog. So it's not like she paid for some form of advertising. In fact, she canceled her Yellow Page ads 18 months ago. She no longer buys Yellow Page ads, and she was paying $2,000 a month. So I wanted to kick off with that example because I just think she's emblematic of what entrepreneurs can do. It's just amazing to me that a dentist can say, well, shoot, there's no other dentist doing this sort of thing. I might as well be the first. And then she becomes really well-known within the Boston area for doing this. And so to get my business off the ground, I did kind of the same thing. My first major initiative was a blog, which I started in 2004. And then the thing that really got me off the ground was in 2006. I also wrote an ebook. My ebook, the first one I wrote, was called The New Rules of PR. It's still available. And you just go to Google and type in the phrase, The New Rules of PR. You'll find it. It became an instant hit. I had 50,000 downloads in the first month for that ebook. And then that got me a book deal with Wiley. And then my book, The New Rules of Marketing and PR, came out. And I marketed that book on the web. I didn't spend any money to market it. I worked with bloggers to get them to talk about my book. I sent news releases to get people interested in my book. And it became the number one marketing and PR book in the whole world. It's being published in 24 different languages, and it's made the Business Week bestseller list multiple months. So... I think Dr. Smith and I and everyone else who's listening in on this call, we're all kind of the same. You know, we're running businesses. We're trying to get ourselves out there. We can't devote 100% of our time to marketing. And we do what we can. But ultimately, what's successful for so many entrepreneurs these days is creating something that's interesting on the web and having people find it and share it, and having that then help them to be the top in the search engine results.
So just maybe you could talk a little bit about that, because, you know, there are a zillion e-books, and there are a lot of people now who have sort of gotten on to the idea that, you know, an e-book...
Yeah, I guess I've created a monster.
but the next question is, so if you're going to, you know, go to the bother of putting together a 20-page e-book, and maybe you get a nice designer and everything... How do you turn it into an instant hit?
A phenomenon. Well, the thing that you need to do is, the first thing is you need to create it with a few things in mind. You need to, first of all, make it landscape orientation. Rather than the way a normal piece of paper is called portrait orientation, you flip it 90 degrees so it fits perfectly on a computer screen. And then you make it totally free. In other words, no registration. You don't try to sell it. The purpose of the ebook is to spread your ideas. You mentioned it earlier, but I do think it's critically important, so I'll mention again, you hire a good designer to help you to design it, because it instantaneously, when people see the design of the ebook, they make an instant decision of whether they want to read it or not. We also talked about this earlier, but again, I'll repeat it, is you don't write about your products and services in an ebook. Instead, you write about something that is a problem that your buyer personas have that you can help solve for them. So if you've done all of those sorts of things and you've done them all well and you have what you think is a really good ebook, then your next step is to get it out there. So you need somewhere to put it on the web. So if you have a blog or you have a website, that's the right place to put it. If you don't have a blog or a website, you can create a really simple website to house it, but somewhere that people can find it on the web. Then you try to tell people who will help you to spread the fact that that ebook is out there. So if you have a store, or you're like Dr. Smith who has a dentist office, or if you're like me that goes to conferences, make a postcard-sized little postcard that has the front cover of your ebook on the front, and on the back just a real simple, like 2 or 3 sentence description of what the ebook's about, and then the URL where they can go and pick the ebook up. So you do that like as a postcard that you can hand out. Dr. Smith could leave it in her dental office, and then people could go find it that way. If you know bloggers in your space, send them a link. Maybe they'll write about it. If you know people, or you yourself is on Twitter, you can tweet about it, or you can try to get other people to tweet about it. You can, and I highly recommend this, not that many people do it, put the URL on your business card, or better yet, put the URL to your ebook in your email signature line. So every time you send a new email, at the bottom it says right underneath your name, please download my free ebook. You have the title of the ebook, and then you have a link to the URL where you get it. Now, ultimately, if you start to seed it in all of these ways, and there's other ways too. You know, if you're clever, you can think of a lot of other great ways. If you start to seed it and it's good, people will then start to share. So one person will share it with another. Someone will post it on their blog. Maybe someone from the media will pick it up. Now, with Dr. Smith, I was telling this story to a reporter at Fortune magazine, and they wrote about it. So all of a sudden, national media attention. And when people start to talk about it, more and more people will begin to download it, and then hopefully more and more people will talk about it, and then you've created sort of a viral phenomenon, and lots of people will view it. But that really becomes up to you to create that initial spark, that initial trigger, by getting it out as many places as you possibly can, and ultimately it will only spread if it's spreadable. What I mean by that is, if it stinks, no one will spread it. If it's good, people will spread it.
Is there some kind of litmus test that you can, you know, use to evaluate people's e-books? You know, if someone was to send you, you know, 10 e-books, how would you know quickly which were the ones that were likely to be spreadable?
It's pretty interesting because I get 2 or 3 a day now. People send them to me because I'm kind of a clearinghouse for e-books because I'll tweet about them and sometimes I'll blog about them. All of the things that I already mentioned are really important. It's got to have a fantastic cover. It's just got to draw you in. The first few pages have to draw you in from the design perspective. It has to be something that's not trying to overtly sell something. Like, I'm not interested, and I can virtually guarantee it will never spread if somebody is just using the ebook format to try to sell something, you know, if it feels like an advertising circular or something like that. If it very clearly articulates a problem that the content of the ebook will sell, it usually feels like it's going to probably do pretty well. But like I said, initially the main thing is that design just has to be great. And I'm a writer, so coming from me to say the design is important is a pretty big thing, because people aren't going to even read it unless the design's good. And then once the design's good, of course the writing's got to be good as well.
So, I don't know if this is outside your domain or not, but you know, one of the challenges I think for the entrepreneur, small business person, for anybody is, how do you, you know, if you're not a designer, you don't know a designer, everybody who owns a computer thinks they can be a designer, how do you find a good designer? What is a good designer?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, a good design is subjective. I mean, something that I like may not be something that you like or that someone else likes. So you do kind of need to have a sense of the people that you're trying to reach, who your buyer personas are. So, you know, if you're in a very conservative business, you know, let's say you're a lawyer, you know, you've got a choice. You're in a very conservative business. You know, you're a lawyer is about helping people to mitigate risk or help them to, you know, to work through, you know, issues that that are, you know, important for their lives. You know, the typical approach would to have a very conservative design, a very corporate kind of buttoned-up suit and tie sort of feel. But I wonder what would happen if a lawyer all of a sudden took a fun and funky approach. Now, I'm not suggesting that. I'm not recommending that. But I'm just wondering what would happen. I'd rather do business with a lawyer that had a fun and funky approach. But maybe I'm just an outlier. I don't know. So the first thing is to have a real good sense of who your buyer personas are. Now, I do think that anybody can find a good designer, and I think almost everyone can afford a good designer. And here's what I recommend. Use Craigslist and just go onto Craigslist, and you can create a little advertisement saying that you're interested in hiring a graphic designer to create for you a 20-page ebook. And then invite people who are interested in bidding for that work to send you samples of their existing works, plus the fee that they would charge you to do that. And I've known a number of people who have done this, and you end up getting some really good designers who can do the work for not a whole lot of money and are happy to have the work. You know, we're in the middle of this, as we're recording this right now, we're in the middle of the summer. There are people who are between their second and third year of design school who, you know, college, who would be thrilled to get some work like this that they could do for 10 or 20 hours over the school break, and maybe they'd only charge you $20 an hour. So all of a sudden, for $200 or $300, you could have, you know, a semi-professional designer do your work for you. So I do think you can get a really excellent design not very much money if you're clever about trying to find somebody to do it for you.
And I think the other most important thing that you mentioned is making sure not to sell, because people don't like to be sold, but they do like to buy.
Right. Well, yes, absolutely. But the other point I was going to make real quickly is that I think it's also a good idea to have a good editor work with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can find also a good editor, maybe a former journalist, also through Craigslist. You know, just say, I'm looking for an editor. I've got a 5,000-word e-book that I want somebody to help me to proofread and edit. And, you know, again, maybe it's only $25 or $30 an hour. Maybe it only takes five or six hours to do. Money well spent.
Good advice. We spent a lot of time talking about e-books, and obviously they're a great way of getting attention, getting people to know you, getting to understand that you know what their problems are, and hopefully have a solution. You know, we don't have a lot of time to run through these, but maybe you can just spend, you know, 2 or 3 minutes. What's the second, third, fourth, fifth most effective way of doing the same thing if you didn't want to use an e-book?
I'm not going to try to prioritize them because, frankly, it depends on, number one, the buyer persona, number two, what kind of information you're trying to get out into the marketplace, and also a little bit about where your skill sets lie. But, I'm a huge fan of YouTube videos. You know, it's free to do a YouTube video. You can create a YouTube video really easily, post it, and get it out there. And by the way, I would get it out there the same way that we talked about before with the e-books, is seeding the market and all the sorts of ways that we talked about. I'm still a fan of the good old-fashioned website. You know, people haven't talked about websites for a while because there's all this newfangled stuff like Twitter and whatnot. But I'm still a fan of a content-rich website that has incredible value. Now, the difference between a good website and a brochure, which is what most websites are, is what we've already talked about, is can you create a website that's designed not about you and not designed for your ego, but instead helps to provide valuable information for the people you're trying to reach? And can you create some interesting information on that website that will help people to solve problems and brand your organization as someone to do business with? And that can be some photographs on your site. It can be some interesting pages of content. You know, instead of doing a 20-page ebook, you could do 20 great web pages, each with a small essay on it that helps people. So photographs, audio content, charts and graphs, data, all of these are great ways to get the information out there.
Great. Before we wrap up today, David, we haven't talked about your latest book, How Will You Create a Worldwide Rave. What are the most important ideas in it for entrepreneurs and small business owners?
Sure. So I wrote this book, The New Rules of Marketing and PR, became a big hit. One of the things that I kept getting so fascinated about is, and we've talked about a lot today, Charlie, is why does one thing take off and become really popular on the web and another thing doesn't? Why does one YouTube video get 100,000 hits, yet another YouTube video that's seemingly the same will only get 100 hits? I mean, what's going on there? So my book, Worldwide Rave, talks about that. And I came up with sort of six things that seem to be constant over all of the different things that have really taken off on the web, and identified those as the things that are important if you're trying to create a worldwide rave of your own. I'll just go through them really quickly. I don't have any time to spend any time on them. The first one we've already spent a lot of time on, actually talking about, nobody cares about your products except for you. The second one is no coercion required. What I mean by that is you don't have to try to convince somebody to read your information or to watch your video. If it's good, they will. So don't try to create fancy techniques to get people to look at your stuff. Like, you don't need to give 20% off or free shipping or whatever. If they're interested, they'll be interested. Lose control of your marketing and your content. We talked about this a little bit. I highly recommend that people don't require an email registration in order to get your information. In other words, if you're going to do an ebook, don't require people to give you an email address first. Just let them download it. Fourth is put down roots, which means that wherever your buyer personas are is where you should be too. So if they're on LinkedIn, you should be on LinkedIn. If they're on Twitter, you should be on Twitter. create triggers that encourage people to share. And we talked about some of those, you know, things like letting your network know about your ebook and putting your ebook URL into your email signature line. Those are creating triggers that encourage people to share. And finally, point the world to your virtual doorstep. In other words, after you've created something that's valuable, let's say it's an ebook or a video, at the end of the ebook or video, have a place that people can go, a website or a page or somewhere, even a phone number, where they can contact you. Because if you've created something great, people will want to do business with you. So those are the things that if you do those well, you're much more likely to create something that spreads, that people will share, that ultimately, hopefully, will become a worldwide rave.
So speaking of contacting you and sharing, I know you have obviously have a handful of free books that people can download.
I do.
How do people get those, and how do they get in touch with you?
Well, okay, great. So just to show the power of how some of this stuff works, if you go to Google and type in the phrase viral marketing, on the first page you will find my ebook, which is called The New Rules of Viral Marketing. So that just shows the power of the things that we've been talking about today, because viral marketing has something like 4 million hits, and there I am on the very first page. You can go to my blog, which is www.webinknow.com, and that's W-E-B-I-N-K-N-O-W, webinknow.com. And I've got a bunch of free ebooks and blog posts and all kinds of good stuff there that people can poke around with. And if you want to dig in a little bit deeper, the two books that we talked about, The New Rules of Marketing and PR, that's the Business Week bestseller. It's out in 24 languages. And the new book, which came out just a couple months ago, is called Worldwide Rave. Both of them are in most bookstores, certainly in North America, and, of course, on the online books sites like Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com.
Well, David, that's been very helpful, and it's been a pleasure talking with you. And I know you've got to run in a minute, but thank you for taking the time to be with us today.
Oh, thank you, Charlie.